10% or 55 issues are unchanged on the New York Stock Exchange today. Almost back to where we were 6 weeks ago with the way the market's action has been today. This has been Bill Burnside of the William C. Burnside Company, and thank you for listening to me at WILL.
Hey, Don, what was your favorite subject in grade school? Science, right?
I loved science, Yael, but my favorite part of school was definitely recess.
Really? I always thought of you as being a kind of studious kid.
Oh, I was. I loved learning, but recess was the best. I don't really remember exactly what I learned in third grade, but I vividly remember running around outside during playtimes. And the thing is, recess is important for learning. Many studies have shown that taking breaks helps improve memory and brain function. Whether it's kids playing during recess or adults taking a coffee break at work, learning happens best when it's broken up into chunks instead of happening over one long continuous period. Another way to put it is that during learning, the brain needs periodic rest to replenish chemicals important for forming long-term memories.
Okay, but if taking breaks is so important, then why have so many elementary schools shortened recess or gotten rid of it completely over the past decade?
Well, it's not because recess isn't valuable for learning. Many schools are under pressure to reach certain performance standards in math and reading, so administrators often cut recess in order to cram in more instruction and classwork. But that goes against the bulk of the scientific data that suggests recess helps improve learning. Plus, not surprisingly, free play and physical activity have been shown to be good for kids' mental, social, and physical health.
So schools should probably increase recess time, not cut it.
That's true, according to science.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Jeremy Shear with help from Maria Schmidt in Applied Health Science. For a moment of science, I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, Kenya's Selina Kazge won the women's race in the Boston Marathon, and Ethiopian Deriba Merga took the men's title as Americans finished third in both divisions today in Boston. The men's winner in the wheelchair division was South African Ernst van Dijk. His victory today is his eighth. Van Dijk extended his own record for victories in the men's wheelchair division and matched the record of women's wheelchair racer Jean Driscoll of Champaign for most Boston Marathon victories ever. The women's wheelchair winner this year, Japan's Wakoko Tsuchida, has now won her third straight in Boston. The annual Patriots Day baseball game in Boston featured the Red Sox against Baltimore. The Sox beat the Orioles yesterday 2-1. The win today gives Boston a sweep of the four-game series, and it was a decisive victory today. Boston dominated. The score, Boston 12. The Orioles won. The NBA playoff schedule is a brief one this evening, as only two games are slated to be played. The Celtics are home tonight for Game 2 with Chicago after the Bulls won the opening contest in Boston 105-103. The other game is in San Antonio as the Spurs face the Mavericks in Game 2 of their series. Dallas won the opening game 105-97. And there are three games in the NHL playoffs tonight in Montreal. The Canadiens are facing Boston in Game 3 of their series, with the Bruins leading 2-0. New York's Rangers lead Washington by the same margin and are home this evening to the Capitals. And Chicago plays Calgary with a 2-0 lead over the Flames. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Anderson Foundation, Risk Management Commodities, Lafayette, A-Plus Farms Limited, Pine Village, and Schaumburg Farms, Chenoa. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
One thing people seem to like a lot these days is Twitter. Twitter, for the uninitiated, is a social media site that began with the idea that people could stay connected by tweeting each other with short answers to a simple question: what are you doing? While it may have been a little frivolous at first, Twitter is being increasingly used by companies as a marketing tool, and for many, it's become a source of news. NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports.
Some people, including Hanson Hossein, get much of their breaking news from tweets, Twitter messages of 140 characters or less that dance across their computer screen.
I know if something really crazy happens in the world, or something really interesting happens in my world, which is technology and communication, someone's going to pick it up pretty quickly and let us all know about it.
Hossein, a digital media expert at the University of Washington, follows about 250 people on Twitter and receives everything they post on Twitter's website. The Silicon Valley startup doesn't have any reporters or photographers. Rather, anyone and everyone who sees or hears just about anything can post it online.
So right now, I'm just tweeting. Wendy Kaufman from NPR is in my office, wants to find out more about how breaking news works in social media.
Okay, not exactly earth-shattering stuff. But suppose, Hossein says, you were on a ferry in the Hudson River on January 15th when the U.S. Airways jet ditched in the water.
There were people there with their cell phones who could report on this. Not necessarily professional journalists, but they're there, and that makes all the difference.
Within minutes of the plane going down, an eyewitness snapped a photo and put it up on Twitter.
So that's a million-dollar shot. That's the money shot.
It's a spectacular photo.
It really is. He's on the ferry, and he shot that. There's a plane in the Hudson, and I'm on the ferry going to pick up people. Crazy.
That and other Twitter messages were forwarded around the globe within minutes, picked up by, among others, traditional journalists who use that information as a starting point for their own reporting. Similarly, traditional reporters sometimes take cues and get breaking news from the free online Wikipedia. Just about anyone can write and edit it. That explains, for example, how John Updike's death could be noted on the author's wiki page even before NPR could confirm that he had died. The big question, can you trust the news you get from social media?
You know, just because a person says it and says it online or says it on a Twitter page does not make it true, not even close.
Al Tompkins is an online expert at the Poynter Institute, a journalism training center. Professional reporters, he notes, have an obligation to verify information before they publish or broadcast it. But he says too many individuals who post to the web have turned that tradition on its head, reporting first and verifying later, if at all.
The enemy of truth is speed. And in our business, in journalism, we're always fighting that friction, aren't we?
He says reporting on the web often has too little concern for the truth than verification. So the challenge for all of us is to figure out what's real and what is not to be believed. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
As challenging as it is for young women to avoid pregnancy, for older women getting pregnant is difficult. In fact, one out of every 100 babies born in the U.S. is conceived with medical help, and most of the time that means in vitro fertilization, IVF, where eggs and sperm are united in a petri dish and then embryos are transferred to a woman. IVF does increase the odds of multiple births. NPR's Patty Naimond reports on how some women feel about that and what doctors are doing about it.
Heather is typical of the patient American fertility doctors see. She's a career woman who got married in her mid-30s and then tried to get pregnant. Heather figures she spent about $20,000 for one round of IVF treatment, and she says she would have been happy with more than one baby.
We would have been delighted with twins. This round, we actually implanted 3 embryos. At the time, I was 38 and a half. You know, we would have been delighted to have twins. I would have been fine with having triplets, actually, but, you know, it just didn't work out that way.
Reproductive endocrinologist David Adamson says many patients feel this way. Adamson's the former president of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, which sets guidelines for how many embryos should be transferred in an IVF procedure.
These folks have been trying to get pregnant for usually at least 4 or 5 years. They've already spent a lot of time and money, and so they really want to get pregnant.
And so most U.S. doctors transfer more than one embryo to their patients during IVF. In Europe, it's a different story. According to Finnish obstetrician and gynecologist Zdravka Veleva, twins and triplets frequently are born early.
IVF babies have been traditionally born prematurely. The goal is to have one healthy baby, and the healthy baby usually is the one which is born at term.
The priority in Finland, then, is to achieve pregnancy with only one embryo. Dr. Veleva and colleagues recently did a study where each patient produced an average of 5 healthy embryos. A single embryo was then transferred to the patient. The rest were frozen. If the patient didn't get pregnant the next month, another embryo was thawed and transferred. If the patient still didn't get pregnant, then the next month, another single embryo was thawed and transferred, and so on for several months. Veleva says in the end, women undergoing this process were more likely to have babies than women who received multiple embryos in the first place.
If you transfer only one good quality embryo, and if you freeze all the others, then you have a higher chance of having at least one child from either a fresh or a frozen cycle.
But here in the U.S., doctors say that may not work as well. For one thing, women in this country usually have to pay for IVF treatments on their own. Many just can't afford multiple rounds of IVF. In Europe, national health insurance typically pays. Dr. Marcel Cedars is a reproductive endocrinologist at the University of California, San Francisco. She says European women seeking IVF treatment are typically younger than U.S. women, and usually they have paid maternity leave to rely on, and their youth increases the chance of producing healthy embryos.
The eggs actually age, and it's estimated that at age 42, for instance, about 80% of the eggs are genetically abnormal.
Even so, doctors are transferring fewer embryos today than in the past. Because of that, there are fewer triplet births, less than 2%. But the twin rate remains high, and Dr. Cedars says that needs to change.
The holy grail of IVF is really trying to find the way to identify the single embryo so that we can eliminate multiple pregnancies. And I think that's been one of the most difficult strategies, is trying to find ways to identify implantable, viable embryos.
And scientists think they're just a couple of years away from figuring that out. Patty Neiman, NPR News.
It's 2:52. Good afternoon. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn, and this is day 6 of our spring membership drive. Heather Miller of our development staff is here with me in the studio. Well, listeners, here's a question I have for you. How many times have you tuned in to AM 580 to bring you up to date on what's happening? How many times have you listened to the Afternoon Magazine during the past year? Well, you do that because you know that we're a dependable source of local, national, and international news, and also agricultural information. We're here to remind you that you, as our listeners, are our most dependable source of funding.
And I just want to say, Celeste, that this afternoon we've raised nearly $4,000 in listener support since we began around noon. So hats off to all of you who have been contributing. You certainly proved how important your support is. But we're still going to encourage those of you that have been listening and wondering, should I support? Absolutely, you should. And your contribution of $10 a month, $120 for the whole year, will play an essential role in the work that we do each day. So go to your phone, call 217-244-9455 and make your pledge. And you can use your Visa or MasterCard, American Express, or Discover to put your contribution to work instantly for WILL. It's easy to listen to AM 580. It's even easier to support it with your contribution.
Okay, and we've had terrific support today from agricultural listeners, those folks who make their living providing us our food and fiber, and we want to thank them very much. Also, that challenge from some agricultural interests and Dave Dickey continues until 3 o'clock this afternoon. So if you're listening and the closing market report and market updates are important to you, well, join those who have joined us, and let's keep on building to our base of support. Now, Here we go. Let me give you this information. AgriGold Hybrids, Risk Management Commodities, the Andersons, Caden EFG, and Bates Commodities are going to give WILL $1,250 when we hear from 100 supporters of agriculture. And to get the phones ringing, AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey is going to contribute an additional $250 when we hear from 25 supporters of agriculture before 3 p.m. today. So $1,500 on the line, the number to call, 217-244-9455. We've got 5 minutes to do that, to get some money out of Dave's back pocket and from some of our underwriters, AgriGold Hybrids, Risk Management Commodities, the Andersons, Caden EFG, and Bates Commodities. What happens when you give people the information they need? Well, they are ready to make important decisions. So whether you're relying on market updates or news, weather, well, if you've got the good, if you've got good solid information, you're ahead of the game. It's how we function as a community. It's getting proper information and putting it together, and we can be good decision makers. It's critical that solid, dependable information is here on AM 580 because you have found it, and we want to keep it going strong. You can help make that happen with a gift of financial support. Make a pledge call this afternoon to 217-244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org. Maybe you're listening online at will.illinois.edu. We'll just go over to the right-hand corner of the homepage and click on that light bulb. And you'll be there. Heather?
Absolutely. And when you make a pledge of $75 or more, we'll send you the WILL member card. With that, you'll get 2-for-1 dining, including in the Chicago area. And I have to tell you, I've taken calls from numbers and numbers of folks who have called back and said, you know, that member card, I made back my pledge and then some in one weekend in Chicago. So it's a really great deal shopping online. And new this spring, we've added some entertainment venues, some museums and outdoor parks. So check it out and make your pledge. Get that member card coming to you. Call 217-244-9455 and make that pledge of financial support. It supports programs like Afternoon Magazine and the Ag Updates, all of that coming to you with your pledge of support. And if you're on the web, willpledge.org.
And thanks to everyone who has joined us.
Earth and sky.
We have extensive documentation now of a variety of impacts of climate change in natural systems.
You're listening to ecologist Jerry Melillo. He and colleagues are working to document climate change impacts.
Everything from increases in fire frequency in the West, outbreaks of insect pests across the country related to very often warmer winters or a combination of warmer weather and drier conditions.
At the March 2009 Summit on America's Climate Choices, Melillo said water is a key impact.